And now you're all young, with the exception of yourself. Idealistic brahmacharis. Not, I didn't say ideal. Idealistic. There's a difference between ideal and idealistic. The idealistic person is trying to be ideal. He has very high ideas of how we should live. Idealism is often compared with pragmatism, which means to be practical. Vyavaharitva vadam, something like that, you could say. An idealism, how would you say? Adarsha. Adarshatva vada. I can speculate, something like that. For instance, an idealist thinks that we should be very strict in following, and we should try to be pure devotees, really try with all our heart and soul, take on difficulties to do so. And pragmatist says, well, you know, let's be practical. We're not on such a high level. So let's just admit it and chant Hare Krishna as we can, when we can, and get on with the real world. Birth, death, old age and disease. That's the problem with pragmatism. Well, those are four of the main problems. There are unlimited problems. Ashesha, klesha, nishesha. Unlimited difficulties with living in this world. So, now you are young and idealistic, but what of the future? What will happen in future? As many well-wishing devotees will say to you, generally grihastha devotees will say to you, and grihastha non-devotees also, you should be realistic. You are not a paramahamsa. You should get married and admit that you have so many material desires. You won't be able to maintain this idealistic way of life. So they'll preach to you in this practical way, thinking of your real good. And they may tell you immediately, why are you spoiling your life? You should go and get a career immediately, get a good job or some job. And you can also chant Hare Krishna on the side. You yourself, it may happen after some time, it happens to some brahmacharis, they start to feel, who will look after me in my old age? Who will care for me? I will be left on the street to beg, like I'm already doing, actually. The brahmacharis are out on the streets begging. That's one of the things brahmacharis do. Or you may think that, well, it's, you know, it was okay for some time, but it's too much, all this getting up early and having to do what I'm told all the time. I'd like to be more independent. So you think, let me relax a little from all this strict discipline, and maybe I'd like to, you know, enjoy myself a little. As brahmacharis are supposed to follow very strictly, and grihasthas, they can go out to restaurants and eat some different kinds of food, and if they want to have a TV in their home, there's no one to stop them doing that. Of course, we see some brahmacharis do all these things also, but they're not very good brahmacharis. So you may think, let me have my independence, and then I can relax a little. But actually, when you marry, you get disciplined also by your wife. You can sleep till late if you like, not that much later. People they have to get up to go to work by 6 o'clock. They have to get up. We're up by latest 4 o'clock, so it's not that much difference. And you have the immense pleasure of being able to stay up till 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock watching TV, which if you're actually a brahmachari, you wouldn't take any pleasure in that whatsoever. And you may think, you know, well, these devotees, they're too heavy and this and that, and tell me what to do, but, you know, get to work, see what it's like. In an office, if you're working for a boss, of course you can be your own boss. Not everyone's so capable to do that. But it's not so easy, as Maya makes us think. Another alternative is to become what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur referred to as a Babu Brahmachari. That Babu, that word doesn't come in Tamil. In Hindi it's not used so much. Is it at all? I don't hear it much. It's a very Bengali idea. A Babu is a... Well, it can be said respectfully also of a well-to-do gentleman, like that. But it's often used sarcastically also. It doesn't necessarily even mean a well-to-do gentleman, it just means a respectable person, but it often means like that, someone who dresses nicely and chews high-quality pan, and chewing pan is essential for a babu. And wears his dhoti with nice dhoti with the anchal that border is put in the pocket. That's in Bengali style. They do like that. They may walk with a stick also, a nicely designed stick. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to refer to Babu Brahmacharis. That means someone, they get some kind of position in the organization whereby maybe they get an office and they're somewhat senior and they don't really do very much, but they have some kind of air of being important, and their main concern in life seems to be the Mahaprasadam, which means not how it will be offered and served to Krishna, but how they will... see that the remnants are well disposed of. And like this, they live very comfortably, almost like a grihastha, but just one big difference is they're living in the ashram and they're not married, but otherwise they're living quite comfortably. So maybe it's still better to be a Babu Brahmachari than a grihastha, because the attachment to family, home, this and that, and at least the Babu Brahmachari does take Mahaprasad some of the time. But maybe on the other hand, it's better to be an honest grihastha. Anyway, neither... I'm not recommending either of these positions to you. Or... a better alternative, maybe, than either of these two. Actually, to be an honest grihastha, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. It's just that if you're a brahmachari, then why go to that? Because it takes away so much of your time, energy, attention, like this. Another thing you might think as you get older is you tend to slow down. You're not so young and full of energy as you used to be. You like bhakti, you're not interested in family life, material life. So you might think then, why go to all this trouble of preaching, and it's so troublesome, you know, they have to struggle in so many ways, and even within the institution there's always some kind of someone's against you or causing some problems in this way or that way. So why not just concentrate on the nectar, on the nice things? I can do lots of hearing and chanting, maybe sit in the temple or have my own bhajan kuti and do lots of reading. That's really a lot of nectar. Do a lot of chanting, do a lot of kirtan, chant a lot of rounds, live austerely, be a babaji, something like that. Or it may be that one loses the taste for preaching, just everything seems routine. But at the same time, you know that's not really right, so anyway, you prefer just to be low-key like that and be in some temple, take some routine kind of service, and in which there's not much difficulty, not much challenge. You do what you're supposed to do, like maybe giving out charanamrita or something. Usually they have old people doing that. Or pujari work. Of course, there's lots of austerity in pujari work also. But the challenge of preaching is not there. Yeah. Of course, pujaris can preach also, but generally their attention is fully in puja. I'm not by any means saying that pujari service is wrong or inferior, but Krishna says about the preacher, and Srila Prabhupada often quoted that, Nachatasman manushyeshu kaschen me priyakritamaha. That the preacher is dearest to Krishna. So one may think that let me just make a change of pace and do lots of hearing, more hearing and chanting, or settle into some routine kind of service and go on with my spiritual life and like this. So, my recommendation is just do what you're doing now. You can go on like this your whole life. Though there may be many devotees who say, see, you won't maintain this, you're young, you're idealistic, but you can be old and idealistic also. Srila Prabhupada was. If he hadn't been, then we wouldn't be here today. Because he believed in something more than living a quiet, pious life. He could have remained as a quiet, pious babu or sadhu in Vrindavan. But he wanted something better. He wanted something better for the world. So he went out, and by his mercy, we're sitting here today. So it is possible to retain that idealism, and that's the best way to advance in Krishna consciousness, if we're always trying to go higher. Of course, go higher, there are two ways to consider that. One is by our own bhajan, and we may think, let me do a lot of all day hearing and chanting. But another way is by preaching Krishna consciousness and just expecting Krishna's mercy for doing that. So, don't grow old. Well, that's what the materialists want. They want not to grow old. But time inevitably ages the body, but don't become worn out in spirit. Of course, we may become more wise as we grow older, wise in the sense that we get used to the kind of opposition that we will inevitably incur by being idealistic. It may be very gross opposition. We don't see that so much in India, where people actually physically attack us. Or recently in Russia, there was some attempt through the court system to ban the distribution of Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So we don't generally see that. But there may be people telling us, don't remain a brahmachari, or don't preach like this, don't distribute these books. They may be against that. So, yeah, be eternal idealist. Just keep on pushing. Despite everything, don't make long-term plans unless they're for preaching. If you're making plans, thinking what will happen to me when I get old, as soon as you start thinking like that, then you're finished, because then you get in all kinds of anxiety, which is quite useless actually, because I mean, you can make, well, from the material point of view, maybe it's not useless. Maybe you can make all arrangements for yourself to live in old age, but to make those arrangements to live in old age takes up your whole life, to get the money so that you can retire peacefully and then have someone to look after you, or have children to look after you. So what's the use of spending your whole life just so you can die peacefully? Well, that's not guaranteed either. Your children may die, you may die early. There may be cataclysms in which the whole society becomes totally disturbed, such as wars or famines or massive political turbulence or something like that. So there's no guarantee. But well, I never made any plans for old age, and I guess I'm on the verge of old age. I suppose, no, there are some disciples might look after me in my old age. But when I was young, I didn't think that or know of that or even imagine that. So. But anyway, we see there are so many brahmacharis in our movement who spend their whole life in the movement, and Krishna looks after them. Devotees look after them. Krishna looks after them via the devotees. So make your only long-term plan how to serve Prabhupada's mission. That's all. Just go on with that. That's all. That's my advice. If you want to stay young, happy, young in spirit, happy, then keep on pushing. It's a pushing movement. People push us sometimes in the right way for the right things, sometimes in the wrong way for the wrong things. Sometimes in the right way for the wrong things, sometimes in the wrong way for the right thing. But anyway, pushing will be there. In the material world there's also so much pushing. But just keep on trying to push on this Sankirtan movement and remain happy. That's all. There's no need to do anything else. What you're doing now, you can just continue to do that. Of course, circumstances may change, but the basic ideal of trying to spread the Krishna consciousness movement, if we maintain that ideal, then we ourselves will always remain enlivened in Krishna consciousness. So there's no need to become a Babaji or a Babu Brahmachari or a Grihastha. Just do what you're doing. That's my advice to you. Okay, any question about this? Yes, please. We preach vigorously daily. Very good. I'm pleased to hear that. How much time minimum should we give to reading? Well, Prabhupada suggested different things at different times. 1 hour, 2 hours. So you can do. Reading is essential, otherwise what are you going to preach? Now myself, as you see, well, especially when I come here, I spend a lot of time reading, writing, but that's all. The writing is, that's all meant for preaching. The writing is, turns into books, which the books themselves go on preaching. And I go on personally preaching in like this, giving classes, going out and traveling from place to place like this, giving lectures, meeting people, speaking to them like that. But no, don't neglect reading. It's, we can go on and on preaching and spend a lot of hours doing that, but it's important that we read the books also. So 1 hour, 2 hours, you'll get more strength to preach if you do so also. If you spend time reading, as you feel. And you feel the difference when you don't read. Of course, sometimes we may be busy for some festival or something like that. But take the time to read. Hmm.
Mm.
Do you get the same benefit by hearing recorded classes or giving classes among yourselves? Well, how much benefit you get, of course there's no machine to measure that, how many units of benefit you get. But a lot depends not only on the output, but also your ability to receive it. So someone who's very eager to hear, they can get good benefit from either. It's also important that you give classes among yourselves. Prabhupada wanted that. I mean, we, even when Prabhupada was present, we could have just listened to Prabhupada's recorded lectures, but he wanted devotees to give lectures themselves. To practice so that they can speak is one thing. And when you speak, then you get some realization also. You have to really think about what you're saying. And then there can be some discussion afterwards, some give and take, so devotees can also think about their philosophy in that way. Discuss different points. So, yeah, giving classes is good. Do you all give classes here? Who gives classes? Hmm. Like that, yeah. And then, so if you read, that gives you more impetus to study also, doesn't it? So, yeah, please. Give classes among yourselves. Time to time, you can listen to Srila Prabhupada's recorded classes. Also. Anything else? You get more service, then the sadhana can be affected, including the chanting. What to do? The thing is, it's just like someone asked me some stupid question once. I think that was in Baruch. That if someone's drowning and you're chanting your rounds, that was in Baruch, I think, at the side of the Narmada River. You're chanting your rounds. Should you interrupt your rounds to try and save the person? So what do you think? I can't... If you should do something, call out to say... If you're capable, you can swim out to save the person and then come back and chant your rounds. You may have to arrange to get them to hospital or whatever. If you're not capable, you can call out to someone, get a boat or whatever. Do something. So it's like that, you see? The the house may catch on fire, and then you're, well, I'm chanting my rounds, so what do? Burn to death in the house because you can't stop chanting? I mean, there are some practical considerations, unless you want to be a bhajananandi, in which you live with absolute minimum, because the more we interact with the material world, the more problems we have. So either you have no place to live at all, or you have some tiny little hut and minimal possessions, and then you have minimal interaction and minimum chance of having any problems. But to live and to be a preacher in this world, there are so many things to do. So that will, at least from time to time, we'll have to adjust our sadhana, not exactly compromise it, but from time to time. But don't make it a regular habit that you just don't do sadhana properly. That's why it's good to have this early morning program. See, early in the morning, there's little chance of disturbance from the outside world. People don't come knocking at the door, or they don't. You know, in one sense, it's good that everyone's asleep, so you can just do your sadhana. But it may be that sometimes there are things to do, so you have to adjust. That's all. That's all, and it's just part of life in a preaching movement. You have to make some adjustment. But like I say, don't do it on... It may be even on a regular basis. Cooks and pujaris, they often have to... In the early morning, they're not doing their sadhana. They may be cooking or doing the puja. So in that case, you can rise very early. Some pujaris, and if they have to cook in the morning, they may rise very early and chant most of their rounds before Mangaladi. I used to do that, actually. When I was living in London, I had to do the Mangal Arati and then go and cook. I'd offer the Arati and then go and cook. So I rose very early and chanted most of my rounds before Mangal Arati. So some way or other, you adjust, but don't just throw out the sadhana or make it just very rough. That's required, that we have proper sadhana. It's required that those temple presidents and those who are organizing centers, on the one hand, they have to keep everyone busy because an idle mind is a devil's workshop. On the other hand, and there should be always some programs to keep the devotees enlivened and something to do. One Bhaktisthan Saraswati used to have one festival after another, like that. So either they were preparing for it or just cleaning up after the other or something like that. But then in his festival, the festivals would consist of a lot of, well, any Vaishnava festival, a lot of Shravan and Kirtan, especially a lot of hearing. So, yeah, again, it's a matter of balance, but they shouldn't, like, strain the devotees so much so that they don't have time for hearing and chanting. And also, though we're trying to minimize sleep, but we shouldn't minimize it so much so the devotees we used to have devotees who they'd be leaping in kirtan and falling, as they go in the air, they'd fall asleep, and when they'd come down, they'd wake up again. I once, this was in England before I came to India, I, standing up in Guru Puja, I fell asleep three times and had to be woken up because I hadn't had sufficient rest for weeks. So that's maybe a bit extreme. So... keeping some balance is the natyashnato tu yogosti na chai kantama nashnataha na swapna jati shilasya jagrato naiva charjuna. One cannot be a yogi if one eats too much or sleeps too much or eats too little or sleeps too little. Therefore, yukta hara viharasya yukta cheshtasya karmasu yukta swapnava buddhasya Yoga bhavati dukkha. One can overcome all miseries by practice of yoga. If one is moderate in eating, sleeping, recreation, the word is used, yukta hara viharasya, yukta, and activities or endeavors. That's generally how that's first translated. Of course, yukta could also mean everything done for Krishna. But in the context, it means being moderate, neither extremely too much or extremely too little. Yeah, anything more then? Yeah. Will preaching will be effective if we have good sadhana? Is it like that? Generally speaking, we can say that, yeah. Although we do see some devotees, I mean, there are some exceptional devotees who are just like on fire for preaching. They have like an eternal fire burning for preaching, and they're not so, they don't do much sadhana, but they're preaching. But on the other, hand, you could say that, well, for most people need sadhana, so part of preaching is also to do sadhana so that other people can see that. But generally, it's just like, generally someone will, a child will grow up strong and healthy, and a man will have energy if he eats properly. If you don't eat properly, if the children don't get proper nourishment, they don't grow properly. There's one boy in Salem, he's about 9 years old in our Gurukul, and you can see his parents are quite poor, so they gave him to us. You can see he's quite undernourished and sickly. So the same thing, if you don't have proper sadhana, then generally we won't develop properly in spiritual life. And even if we have done sadhana in the past, if we don't maintain it regularly, then we won't retain our strength. So it's a simple principle to understand, isn't it? It's not a very difficult thing to understand, that we need to hear and chant regularly for spiritual strength, right? All right then, anything else? Any shlokas for what? So many there, the shlokas about the yugas in the 11th canto of Bhagavatam. Krite yadhyayato Vishnu. Oh, what is that? Church? No, I'm missing that one. Krite yadhyayato Vishnu, traitayo yajato makai, dvapare paricharyayam kalo dhadhari kirtanat. That's. No, no, exactly. It's given in Bhagavatam. What's the length of a yoga? And in all, practically on all the Puranas, it's given. It's complete speculation. You write some article for Bhagavad Darshan. It doesn't even have to be an article, it can just be some small thing. Some people say this, and there's just complete speculation. There's no the discussion of yugas comes in Shastra, and Shastra defines them. So it's complete speculation. No, it's just complete speculation. Madhav Prabhu already wrote an article about some time ago called Brahmit Kumaris, something like that. Or you can write There are so many, Prabhupada already gave, that if it's not based on Shastra, you have no basis to speak, and that goes for everyone. And you can give this as an example. Okay. So, Dante Nidhaya Churnakang Padayani Patya Kritva Cha Kakushatam Etadaham Bravimi He Sadhava Sakalam Eva Vihaya Duraj Chaitanya Chandra Charne Kuruta Nuragam.